following episode of Kate Voice was recorded at 8 p.m., February 26, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Kate Voice of Resistance!
I'm disappointed in people on our side.
Okay.
For being hypocrites about sexual harassers and abusers of women who are in our party, who are sitting in the White House, who brag about their extramarital affairs, who brag about mistreating women. And because he happens to have an R after his name, we look the other way, we don't complain. This is a party that was ready to endorse, the Republican Party endorsed Roy Moore for the Senate in the state of Alabama, even though he was a credibly accused child molester. You cannot claim that you stand for women and put up with that.
Hi, this is Kay, Voice of Resistance, and I am your host, Kelly. That is longtime conservative Mona Chara, who faced backlash at the orgy of conservatism that is CPAC.
CPAC.
The Conservative Political Action Conference. She was on a panel called Us Two, and she had turned a question about feminist hypocrisy back on the panelist, lambasting Republicans for supporting sexual harassers and abusers of women, unquote. Chara defended her comments on Sunday in a New York Times op-ed entitled, I'm glad I got booed at CPAC. This is great. She says, quote, there's nothing more freeing than telling the truth, and it must be done again and again and again by those of us who refuse to be absorbed into this brainless, sinister, clownish thing called Trumpism, by those of us who refuse to overlook the fools, frauds, and fascists attempting to glide along in the slipstream into respectability, unquote. Now that is a beautiful turn of phrase. Okay, what is going on this week? We pay Congress's salaries, right? We also have this little thing called separation of church and state, right? So why? Why are they returning from a whole week off only to have a short week because of frickin' Billy Graham? Well, let's nuke Vietnam, Billy Graham, a Jew basher, sexist, aspiring war criminal, political operator, and Christian dominionist predicting imminent apocalypse, Billy Graham, who will lie in honor in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda from February 28th through March 1st.
Praise Jesus!
The notorious preacher passed away at age 99 last week. This recognition is a level below lying in state, which is nonetheless rare. The only others to lie in honor are the civil rights leader Rosa Parks and two Capitol Police officers, Jacob Chestnut and John Gibson, who died in the line of duty protecting the Capitol. Congress probably wants to avoid actual work, as they are being forced to face an impossible gun debate. They are coming back to decide if this debate is one worth having just before midterms.
Because everything is politics.
That's stupid!
Control of the Senate is up for grabs. And this week in Congress, it's not on the schedule.
Stop being stupid!
This week in Congress, the House will consider a number of relatively uncontroversial bills under the fast-track suspension of the rules process, which include a bill to provide grants for military trauma care providers to work in U.S. trauma centers when they aren't deployed. Tuesday, we'll see votes on a bill to lift barriers preventing the federal government, states, and victims from pursuing justice against sex traffickers. Additionally, votes on bills related to banking regulations are expected on Tuesday. The Senate convened Monday for a procedural vote on the nomination of Elizabeth Branch to be U.S. Circuit Court judge before the 11th Circuit before taking a potential confirmation vote later in the week. The Senate's schedule for the rest of the week is yet to be announced. Neither chamber of Congress has scheduled votes on legislation to address the status of DACA either. So let's talk about Elizabeth Branch. She is up to be U.S. Circuit Judge, and she's a constitutional originalist.
Oh no.
She was a member of the National Rifle Association from 2009 to 2014, and of course, is a member of the Federalist Society.
Oh no.
With experience in the George W. Bush administration and as a big law commercial litigator.
Oh no.
And unlike the rest of them, she is a rare nominated woman! Alive female! What? So let's talk about her originality. Originalists generally regard the U.S. Constitution as having a fixed meaning reflected in its text, its structure, and the intent of the founders that does not evolve over time. She tried to comfort Democrats by saying she would respect Supreme Court precedent. If you are a minority or a woman, the idea of an originalist may make you rightfully nervous, as the Constitution, as it was set down on paper, had only one class of person in mind.
White dudes.
Branch said she intends to abide by what the drafters of the Constitution meant when the words were drafted. Goodbye, equal rights. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Once she gets confirmed, the 11th Circuit will have fallen into conservative hands for the foreseeable future.
Voting matters, y'all!
As a judge, Branch held in a Gary v. State case that a man could not be convicted of criminal invasion of privacy for recording a video up a woman's skirt with a cell phone while at a grocery store.
Excuse me, what?
Right. 'Cause we aren't entitled to privacy inside our own clothes. Overall, Branch's legal career provides very little insight into how she would operate as an 11th Circuit judge faced with a wide range of constitutional questions, as she has not publicly staked out a position on any hot-button legal issue. Her most controversial public acts seem to be joining the NRA and supporting incumbent Senator Rick Santorum, whom she canvassed for.
I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money.
Who holds a variety of very controversial views. Branch's membership in the Federalist Society is the clearest indication of where her judicial philosophies lie, and another judgeship, and many cases to come, that will go to the dogs.
Take me in, oh tender woman. Take me in, for heaven's sake. Take me in, tender woman.
We have good news. We have received a much-needed balm to rub in the festering wound that is our understanding of current politics. The courts are in the resistance.
Mostly.
The U.S. Supreme Court has smacked our holy rolling president upside the greedy head. On September 5th, 2017, Donald prematurely...
Not the only thing he does prematurely, hey.
Prematurely terminated DACA with a 6-month delay, giving Congress only till March 5th, 2018, to come up with a solution for the over 800,000 unauthorized immigrants. Of course, Congress couldn't have figured anything out. Ultimately, Donald, somewhat unusually, asked the Supreme Court if he could unfairly end the program early. Lower courts blocked the president's plan to scrap DACA by the 5th, and the high court snubbed him. This means that DACA is not going to expire on the 5th. It's still in limbo and a problem, but it's not going to expire right away. The high court said it would not hear the case as no appeals court has yet ruled on the issue. The justices said in a brief order on Monday morning that the appeal was denied without prejudice. A San Francisco-based federal court issued a nationwide injunction last month that DACA must remain in place pending litigation. And the Supreme Court said that it expects the lower court system to proceed expeditiously to decide on this case. So, what's next? The ongoing political and judicial to and fro leaves dreamers, children, and young adults in legal limbo. And of course, there's still no agreement in Congress about what could replace DACA. Though some members of Congress are reportedly working on new proposals, there is less pressure on Congress now to do anything at all, especially before midterms. The Supreme Court's decision could delay decisions on DACA until the administration's policy is being considered by San Francisco-based 9th and U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which has ruled against the president and other challenges, so... yay? Here's hoping. The Dreamers need some more good news.
Take me in,
also in the courts, the Electoral College sucks.
It sucks.
The Electoral College sucks. Hillary won the vote by 3 million votes and still lost. It is not out of the realm of possibility that the Democratic candidate in 2020 can win by 5 million votes and still lose the Electoral College.
This is not democracy. Another rather undemocratic element of the Electoral College, besides denying people the full power of the vote, only to give others a disproportionate amount of the vote, is these winner-take-all states. Donald received 54.94% of the vote in South Carolina, yet he received every single electoral vote from South Carolina. Likewise, Hillary Clinton received 40.67% of the vote in South Carolina, but received none of the electoral votes from South Carolina, which is a load of crap. At least some people are trying to do something about it. A coalition of law firms, politicians, and League of United Latin American Citizens has filed lawsuits claiming the winner-take-all Electoral College system violates the Constitution. The lawsuits argue that the Electoral College system denies citizens their unconstitutional right to an equal vote. Lawyer David Boies, who's leading the coalition, said in a statement, quote, "Under the winner-take-all system, U.S. citizens have been denied their unconstitutional right to an equal vote on presidential elections. This is a clear violation of the principle of one person, one vote," unquote. The suits were filed in the reliably red states of South Carolina and Texas, and solidly blue states in California and Massachusetts. So, here's hoping. Maybe we can change something through the courts.
They have taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
So in the courts is unions. Unions do many things. One. Unity is strength. Unions provide workers with a powerful collective voice to communicate to management their dissatisfaction and frustration. 2. Unions negotiate better terms and conditions. 3. You get more annual leave in a unionized workplace. 4. You earn more in a unionized workplace. 5. You earn more maternity leave, paternity, and caregiver leave. 6. Better job security. 7. You have some on your side when you need them. 8. Unions fight for equal opportunities in the workplace. They stand for equal pay and treatment against discrimination. 9. Union workplaces are safer. 10. All unions offer legal services and advice. And in a proud American fashion, the idiot hordes believe that all of this is a bad thing. The future of unions is at stake, and the arguments have been passionate. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Monday in Janus v. AFSCME. It is a case that could have sweeping ramifications for the public sector unions and government workers across the country. It screws them. Basically, it screws unions. The question of the case is whether a state can force government workers, whether they're a union or not, to pay fees to support the union's collective bargaining and other activities. The plaintiff, an Illinois state employee named Mark Yanis, isn't a union member, but is required by Illinois' fair share law to pay out about $550 annually to the public sector union known as AFSCME. Never mind the fact that this freeloader basically will get to reap the benefits of unions without paying a dime should he win. And should unions not survive because this selfish Trumpolo, I assume he's a Trumpolo, needed to throw a fit, his income and worker protections will go down. A rising tide raises all ships. And not that I care about this asshole's quality of life, but I care about the quality of life for the millions across America that will be gutted should he get his selfish little way. As Justice Sonia Sotomayor argued, quote, "You're basically arguing to do away with unions," unquote. Obama had stood with the unions, but of course, Donald's administration has switched the government's position to oppose unions and many states that allow fair share fees. And there is every reason to think that Trump appointee, Great White Hope, Neil Stolenseit Gorsuch, will side with the court's conservatives. The court's liberals spoke repeatedly about the importance of consistency in the law. Justice Kagan stressed that a 40-year-old court precedent should not be overruled without some compelling justification. Quote, "This is a case in which there is tens of thousands of contracts with these provisions. Those contracts affect millions of employees, maybe as high as 10 million employees," unquote. And Justice Stephen Breyer chimed in, quote, "You start overruling things, what happens to the country thinking of us as a kind of stability in a world that changes a lot?" Unquote. But the conservative justices are unconvinced, professing that overruling the 1977 decision shouldn't change things that much.
You're not helping!
They said that if employees think they have benefited from union representation, then they will pay union dues and fair share fees, even if it is not mandatory.
We call BS!
Despite such assertions, the justices certainly know that unions are faltering in their influence. According to NPR, in the 1950s, about a third of the U.S. workforce was union members. Now it's only about 11% overall. However, while the union membership rate in the private sector is a meager 6.5%, it is more than a third among public employees. The bottom line is that because states genuinely require unions to bargain for and represent all workers, regardless of their membership in a union, this case is something of a dagger pointed at labor's heart. Unions fear that if Yanis prevails, they will bleed operating funds to the point of ineffectiveness. And there is some evidence to support this notion. AFSCME, the union involved in this case, conducted 600,000 one-on-one interviews with employees covered by AFSCME contracts and found that 35% would keep paying dues, 15% would not, and about half were on the fence. This is very likely the end of unions in America.
For the union makes us strong.
Blood money. Georgian NRA lapdogs of the Georgia State Senate are doing the NRA's dirty work and issued the airline Delta an ultimatum. Renew your relationship with the National Rifle Association or you will pay the price. The State House has approved a tax break that would provide $400 million to benefit the airline, but members of the Senate vowed to fight the deal after Delta dropped its discounted fares Saturday for members of the NRA. What happened to the free market being free, huh, guys?
This is ridiculous!
Companies have been leaving the NRA in substantial numbers, and NPR's Marketplace contends that the trend is just beginning. Yay! Hey, assholes. Gun legislation works. A 2013 Boston University of Public Health study found that a 1% increase in gun ownership correlated with a 0.9% increase in the firearm homicide rate at the state level. But I'm guessing the conservatives of Georgia are totally cool with more homicides. Why else would they be doing this? Blood money.
They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS! They say guns are just tools like knives.
So we have been watching the sheer force of power that is these teenagers from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And as it happens, they may have absorbed their activist energy by their school's namesake, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas died at 108, an activist whose father founded the Miami Herald. She was a reporter there back in 1942, and she fought for women's suffrage, joined the Red Cross to take care of wounded soldiers in World War I, and then refugees in Paris after the Great War ended. But her greatest works came much later. In 1947, she wrote the groundbreaking book, River of Grass, the story of the Florida Everglades. In it, she explained how the Everglades functioned and its vital importance to our entire ecological system. She was the primary activist who rose up to protect the Everglades from destruction. She fought Big Sugar on dumping toxic wastewater into the Everglades. She fought the Army Corps of Engineers to block the straightening of the Kissimmee River, explaining how the wandering, winding river filtered water in its journey from Central Florida to the Everglades. The ditch, as she called it, eliminated the filtering system and turned the Everglades into an effective toilet. She also fought the South Florida Water Management District when they allowed water levels in the Everglades to rise dangerously high, killing off the native deer population and other species of wildlife. She was a fighter and activist for protecting things valuable to our planet and all of its inhabitants. How could such a lifelong activist not be proud of these students? How could any reasonable person not be? They have shown more maturity, more command of the English language, more sense than any one of the Republicans and half of the Democrats in office. And I'm of the opinion that this country would benefit from having them deciding the leaders and laws of this country. John Lovett.
So then I drifted for a while till I landed a job. Yeah, as a stockbroker in India.
Not that John Lovett, this one.
Look, I just want to be careful here. I don't know anything about Anthony Scaramucci's habits. I will say that if cocaine became a person, it might consider.
John Lovett wrote a piece that I want to discuss, but first, an introduction. John Lovett was a speechwriter for Hillary Clinton and was a presidential speechwriter for the Obama White House, including he helped write the president's annual remarks to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He's really funny. He is also one of the founders of Crooked Media. Crooked Media has been a source of hope for me. We have all seen the rise of conservative media that has swept America, and Crooked Media has emerged as a wildly successful voice countering their narrative. It was started by a small group of mostly Obama staffers. They host very successful podcasts, plus articles, and now they're starting a newsletter. Pod Save America, a podcast hosted by Jon Favreau.
Yeah, I think what you gotta do now is really think hard, because you have to find somebody. It can't be traced back to either of us.
Not that Jon Favreau. This Jon Favreau.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Jon Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vitor.
On the show today, we'll be talking to the host of With Friends Like These, Anna Marie Cox, about her trip to the Conservative Political Action Conference known as CPAC.
She thought it was just a dream, Jon, but then when she woke up, there was sand in her bed.
Jon Lovett, Dan Pfeiffer, and Tommy Vitor, all veterans of the Obama White House. And this podcast has exploded in liberal America. During the beginning of the Trump era, during the 2016 campaign, the hosts produced a podcast for Bill Simmons' website, The Ringer, called Keeping It 1600, which was supposed to end once the election was over. But given the popularity of it, the three began a new production. In keeping with how Donald's victory was upended, much of the media world, Stephen Colbert is the most watched host on late night, MSNBC is seeing a huge rating surge, and Pod Save America averages about 1.5 million listeners a show. And now they're going to have a show on HBO. The success of Pod Save America and Crooked Media is a source of inspiration to me. In 2017, they were the third for new podcast, just behind S-Town and Dirty John, and it ranked 20th out of all podcasts. The piece Lovett wrote that I want to discuss is about lowering the voting age to 16. Quote, "While we were building a Death Star, Emma Gonzalez and Cameron Caskey were stealing the schematics. I was also reminded of something else. These students who have captivated our politics, who have managed to break the loop in our neutered conversation over gun violence, who have signed up to serve our country, who work after-school jobs and pay taxes, who survived slaughter and formed a movement, are told by their society that they are too young and immature to vote. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit." Unquote. Here's the argument. We amended the Constitution in the 26th Amendment, lowering the voting age to 18 because of what we were asking of young people during the Vietnam War. And rightfully so. Lovett takes on each argument against lowering the age to voting, starting with the contention that they are too immature and their brains are not fully formed. He explains that there's one facet of our minds that is pretty well formed by the age of 16, and that's what's known as cold cognition, the kinds of mental acuity employed when we cast the ballot.
If you say a young person can vote, why not let a young person buy a gun, huh? Huh.
Well, a person's vote does not leave 17 people bleeding out on the floor. Worst thing they can do is vote for Donald.
If you think young people should vote, I suppose you don't have a problem with trying young people as adults in court.
Well, yeah, of course we have a problem trying young people as adults in court. But we do try young people as adults in court all the time, especially if they're black. Young defendants are already sentenced to life in prison by a government they did not choose. To allow a 16-year-old the right to vote does not make them an adult. It just grants them some say in the country we live in.
They'll just vote how their parents tell them to.
Have you ever met a 17-year-old?
This creep just wants to lower the age of consent.
Lovett's response. Quote, "I am including this response despite the fact that it is offered by right-wing trolls because it genuinely surprised me and came up a lot. It did not occur to me that someone would view the right to vote as a means of sexualizing children. But from the deepest part of my heart, fuck you." Unquote.
LOL, Tide Pods.
Look, if we were granting the right to vote by the worst members of a particular group, then no one would ever be granted the right to vote. They will vote no different than the rest of the whole of society. Some will, some won't, some will take it seriously, some won't think there's a point. Quote, 18 is a period of transition. 16 and 17 is often more stable, a time when we are learning civic virtues and when it would be far easier to begin a lifelong routine of voting. Unquote. The right to vote has expanded to women, people of color, and Native Americans, while it has, at the same time, contracted. It has been stripped from felons, minorities, and gerrymandering, and voter purges. Quote, often the disempowered who demanded participation in our democracy were told it was absurd until bullied into not asking again. Those who held the franchise held it close because it was theirs and because it was power. Unquote. And then there's the fact that we know the greater the voter turnout, the more those politicians on the left are elected. Quote, we know the power of the vote. It is about more than a tiny say in a contest between just okay politicians. It is a statement of citizenship. It is a symbol of belonging and the equal dignity of people who live under rules set by their government. It is the first American spectacle. Unquote. Listen. The students of Stoneman Douglas had one major question. Are we going to be safe when we go back to school? And the only honest answer is no. Absolutely not. And we are not doing anything to protect you. Quote, in our actions, in our failures, America is sending the message to teenagers, this country doesn't give a shit about you. Teenagers deserve the vote because the rest of us have proven that we are not adult enough to have their interest at heart. The NRA is right about the importance of self-defense, but wrong about the means. Voting is how America's young people can protect themselves. Unquote. So we need to do what we can to help these kids out. It is the least we can do is call our legislators. So we need to demand a ban on assault weapons. In 2004, the NRA successfully pressured the Republican-controlled government into not renewing the 1994 federal assault weapons ban. The ban had worked to protect lives. After it expired, the number of gun massacre deaths, which had decreased over 40% during the ban, jumped nearly 2.5-fold. Gun violence experts are now renewing their calls for a nationwide ban on these types of weapons, and Americans agree. Recent polls show at least 2/3 of Americans support a nationwide assault weapons ban. In November of last year, Senator Dianne Feinstein introduced an assault weapons ban, S-2095. This bill would ban true sales of high-capacity magazines and military-style assault weapons, including the AR-15, used in many recent gun massacres. Parkland, Las Vegas, Newtown. Legislators must act now before more lives are needlessly lost. Call your representatives now, 202-225-3121. And while we're at it, support expanded background checks for gun purchasers. Currently, background checks are mandatory for commercial gun sales, but not for purchases made through private sellers at gun shows or online. To fix this problem, Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, introduced the Background Checks Expansion Act along with 31 Democratic co-sponsors, which would make background checks nearly universal. The bill would close the gun show loophole by mandating that all sellers run potential buyer information through the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS. It would also require a licensed firearms dealer run the NICS checks on buyers when purchasing a gun from a private seller. The bill maintains some exceptions for law enforcement officials, loans for hunting and sporting events, or immediate self-defense. Senator Murphy has been working to pass the expansion of background checks since 20 Newtown children were killed in his state. While he acknowledges the tough hurdles such legislation faces, especially from the NRA, public support for expanded background checks has risen 90%. It is time for Congress to finally take action against rampant gun violence in this country now. 202-225-3121. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download this show at crabdavi.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I've discussed in this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. Okay, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.